Shri Sri 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 Gangamaya ke, Jamunamaya ke, Bhakti Devi ke, Tulasi Devi ke, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ke, Jaya Jaya Gaur. All glories to Samalabhatis. All glories to Samalabhatis. All glories to Samalabhatis. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gaur. All glories to Sri Guru.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Ayur
Bharati
Vai
Pumsam
Udyan
Nastam
Cha
Yan
Nasau
Tasyarte
Yat
Shano
Nita
Uttama
Shloka
Bharataya
Ayurharati
Vaipumsam
Udyan astam chayan
asnasau
Tasyarte yachano
nita
Uttama shloka vartaya
Ayurharati
Vaipumsam
Udyan astam
chayan
nasau
Tasyarte yakshano
nita
Uttama shloka
vartaya
Ayurharati
Vaipumsam
Udyan astam
chayan nasau
Tasyarte yakshano nita
Uttamashloka vartaya
duration of life,
Harati
decreases.
Vai
certainly.
Pum
Sam
of the people.
Udyan
rising.
Astam
setting.
Cha
also.
Yan
moving.
Asau
the
sun.
Tasya
of one who glorifies the Lord.
Rite
except.
Yat
by whom.
Shana
time.
Nita
utilized.
Uttama
shloka
the
all good personality of Godhead.
Vartaya
in the topics of. Translation. Both by rising and by setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all good personality of Godhead. Report. This verse indirectly confirms the greater importance of utilizing the human form of life to realize our lost relationship with the Supreme Lord by acceleration of devotional service. Time and tide wait for no man, so the time indicated by the sunrise and the sunset will be uselessly wasted if such time is not properly utilized for realizing identification of spiritual values. Even a fraction of the duration of life wasted cannot be compensated by any amount of gold. Human life is simply awarded to the living entity, Jiva, so that he can realize his spiritual identity and his permanent source of happiness. A living being, especially the human being, is seeking happiness because happiness is the natural situation of the living entity. But he is vainly seeking happiness in the material world, in the material atmosphere. A living being is constitutionally a spiritual spark of the complete whole, and his happiness can be perfectly perceived in spiritual activities. The Lord is the complete spirit's whole, and his name, form, qualities, pastimes, entourage, and personality are all identical with him. Once a person comes into contact with any one of the above-mentioned energies of the Lord through the proper channel of devotional service, the door to perfection is immediately opened. In the Bhagavad Gita 2:40, the Lord has explained such contact in the following words, quote, "Endeavors in devotional service are never baffled, nor is there failure. A slight beginning of such activities is sufficient even to deliver a person from the great ocean of material fears." End quote. As a highly potent drug injected intravenously acts at once on the whole body, the transcendental topics of the Lord injected through the ear of the pure devotee of the Lord can act very efficiently. Oral realization of the transcendental messages implies total realization, just as fructification of one part of a tree implies fructification of all other parts. This realization for a moment in the association of pure devotees like Sukadev Goswami prepares one's complete life for eternity. And thus the sun fails to rob the pure devotee of his duration of life, inasmuch as he is constantly busy in the devotional service of the Lord, purifying his existence. Death is a symptom of the material infection of the eternal living being. Only due to material infection is the eternal living entity subjected to the law of birth, death, old age, and disease. The materialistic way of pious activities, like charity, is recommended in the Smriti Shastras as quoted by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Money given in charity to a suitable person is guaranteed bank balance in the next life. Such charity is recommended to be given to a brahmana. If the money is given in charity to a non-brahmana, without brahminical qualification, the money is returned in the next life in the same proportion. If it is given in charity to a half-educated Brahmin, even then the money is returned double. If the money is given in charity to a learned and fully qualified Brahmin, the money is returned 100 and 1,000 times. And if the money is given to a Veda Padaka, one who has factually realized the path of the Vedas, it is returned by unlimited multiplication. The ultimate end of Vedic knowledge is the realization of the personality of Godhead. Lord Krishna, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Viraischa Sevedaham Eva Vedya. There is a guarantee of monies being returned if given in charity, regardless of the proportion. Similarly, a moment passed in the association of a pure devotee by hearing and chanting the transcendental messages of the Lord is a perfect guarantee for eternal life, for returning home back to Godhead. Madhama gatva punar janma navidyate. In other words, a devotee of the Lord is guaranteed eternal life. A devotee's old age or disease in the present life is but an impetus to such guaranteed eternal life. So the time factor is controlling everything. Everything is acting by time. In the material world, that's the principle that makes everything function. Because here you have dead matter. And in dead matter, there is no activity. So activity is introduced through time. Time means movement. So if there's any movement, then that requires time. We see in the Bhagavatam that time is explained by the movement of a ray of sun over an atom. That's where it starts. So movement is time. There's no difference. So any activity performed then takes time. And this time, if that activity performed is not connected to the Lord, then is lost, is wasted. So every moment that things move forward, then things are lost. But that which is performed in relationship to the Lord, that is not lost. And to that degree that one is absorbed, to that degree one's time is valuably utilized. Here we see it mentions the rising and setting of the sun. Because in here, then we look forward to the day. When the day starts, things happen. But still, it's mentioned, it's useless. And for some, when the night comes, now things start happening. But again, mentioned as useless. So it's being applied, this principle, to us. Srinatha, do you need to sit in the chair? No. Thank you. So, the living entity will think what I am doing is very important. And therefore, the time is not wasted. But here, by saying the rising of the sun or the setting of the sun, this covers all the activities that the living entity may do. His activities for economic development, you know, or his activities for enjoyment. Either of these are considered useless if they're not connected to the Lord. So, here then Prabhupada's bringing out the point that if it's connected to the Lord, once one devotes devotional service, one is actually the doors of liberation are opened. This is a very touchy subject. As we see it, this subject didn't do Gopal Chapala any good, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because liberation is considered of great value, something very special, rare, unique, hard to work for, hard to obtain. And so, therefore, if you say simply by taking up devotional service, the doors of liberation is opened, then kind of like makes those who are interested in liberation or in knowledge feel not so important, not so special. Because something that's so difficult being used so easy, right? If you are sitting there and working and you spend hours doing something, and then somebody comes along and in about 2 seconds does it,
it doesn't really add to your self-esteem, right? So, therefore, devotees have a tendency to unnerve impersonalists. Because what the impersonalist works their whole life for and basically will never get, the devotees, it's already there. It's just whether they take it or not. We see the door is opened. It doesn't say that one who takes up devotional service enters through the door of liberation. Right? This is an important point. It says that the door is opened. Now it's up to you if you want to step through it or not. That's the point. Just by taking up devotional service, you're liberated. It's just whether you want to recognize it or not. Do you want to accept it? Do you want to act on that platform? Or do we want to, by habit, just continue with our attachments? And so therefore, even though we are liberated, act as one who is not. So, because this is a practical science, then it is given that liberation is a state of consciousness. So you can say the devotee, in one sense, is not liberated, because consciousness-wise, he has not accepted that platform. But factually, they are, because from now on, their activities aren't really connected here. It looks like they're going on here. But, because they've taken up devotional service, it's just time before they're out, before they're liberated. So, in other words, this would connect back with the previous point of whether you have desire, no desire, all desire, want liberation, only want pure devotional service. You can perform devotional service. And Prabhupada makes a very interesting point that devotional service can be performed by anybody, despite what their motive is. This is a very important point. We tend to get bogged down by this sense of material truth. And so therefore the point that even though you may have motives within your heart, you could perform pure devotional service, does not come up as an idea, as a point of discussion. But Prabhupada makes that point clear, is that it can. Your impetus for devotional service may be mundane, but it doesn't mean that the service you perform is not sincere. Does that make some sense? Subtle point here. It has a lot of manifold details, this, but if you can catch the point, it makes life so much easier. You know, if you've ever heard that you need to relax or you're a little uptight or a little too highly strung or wired or so many other things, if you can understand this point, that will all go away. Right? The point is accepting who we are, what we want, that's there. That's because we're conditioned. If we weren't conditioned, we wouldn't be here. Right? Unless we can all say, yes, I'm a pure devotee. I'm going to say pure unalloyed devotee. Then conditioning is there. Right? Now, if we recognize it, then we know who we're dealing with it. Then we engage that in the Lord's service. But it doesn't mean that the service rendered is not sincere. Right? Does that make sense? The two can function differently, because one is the attachment of the living entity to the material energy, and the other is the natural form of the living entity. So, devotional service actually has nothing to do with the material. So it can function separately. It's just a matter of recognizing that. Right? Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Could you hear? Point is being raised is the doubt being raised is that we use the term devotional just by definition. Devotional means no motivation. That's pure unalloyed devotional service. So here, Prabhupada's talking about pure devotees. You see the term always being used here is pure. Now and again he uses pure unalloyed, that's what we're trying to get to. But pure means your overall motive, your ultimate motive is to become a devotee of Krishna. But due to conditioning, we have these, lower goals that are between where we are today and that. Does that make sense? So simultaneously, you're dealing with your ultimate goal is to develop love for Krishna. At the same time, you have all these little smaller goals in between. So the smaller goals in between will be an obstacle. But it doesn't mean that you can't function on that ultimate goal and render service. Right? I mean, you think about it yourself. You have, let's say, you go into the temple, there's a nice kirtan, you just become fully absorbed. Right? Or some aspect of worshipping the deity, and you just fully absorb, or any other act of fully absorbed. So that is pure devotional service. It doesn't mean that there isn't the underlying idea, okay, if I take up devotional service because it's a religious principle, therefore religion gives pious result, therefore all the anxieties in my life and all those things on the emotional, economic, social, all these things will go away. Is it still there? Right? The point is this, if it's gone, then you're just rendering pure devotional service. Right? If it's not gone, then how is anybody performing any devotional service? Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is the two are going on simultaneously. It's just a matter of where you put your focus. You put your focus on pleasing Krishna, it takes on the quality of pure devotional service. If you take it on, I'm rendering this service to get this result for myself, then it's missed. So the point is despite having motives, we can still act on the pure platform. That's Prabhupada's point. So being able to separate these two and to be able to acknowledge that, if you think about it, it removes a lot of social difficulties. Identity crises, worries about everybody's position in the society, it removes problems with authority, right? You know, like this, their motive, how can they be a leader? But the thing is they're just like you. They want to please Krishna, and now and again they have a bad day. Right? The conditioned nature pops up its ugly little head. You know? But that doesn't mean that they can't perform this service sincerely to please Krishna. Right? So you can see that itself could clear huge amounts of social obstacles within society. And with ourselves, as we may have a motive, then personally we may have motives, but that doesn't mean that we can't arrange our life to render pure devotional service. At the same time as considering our conditioned nature and seeing that it's also engaged in the Lord's service. Otherwise then we miss out on the pure devotee syndrome here, that it's all Maya, but I got to be the pure devotee, because that's what we're supposed to do. So we neglect all the material things, at the same time keep them all and fight like cats and dogs over them. But because it's unspoken, you don't talk about it, but it's going on. You know? Does that make sense? Just like in the West. Your average Westerner, you don't talk about sex. It's just forbidden. But you can do it right in the street, but you can't talk about it. Well, in India, they can very openly talk about it, in relationship to the scriptures and that, right? But they don't do it, right? Just like when you come to the chapter in Bhagavatam on Mohini Murti, right? And Lord Shiva is running, due to lust, running after Mohini and passing semen and embarrassing himself, and his wife is freaking out. You ever heard anyone give full lectures on that section, or they just kind of like breeze through it? They breeze through it, right? Any section where you come to that, it's just kind of like, well, and then profits, and book distribution, yeah, we got it, right? Because as Westerners, you don't talk about it. You just do it. But we see here, Sukadev Goswami, pure unalloyed devotee, he has no attachment to it yet, because it doesn't mean anything to you, therefore you can talk about it. because it's very valuable, it's very important to you. Therefore, you know, it's special, it's secret, you can't talk in such just general terms because it has a special mystical value. You understand? So, the point is that due to that, then it's hard to recognize that I can have the motive that all I want to do is please Krishna and go back to Godhead. But at the same time as I have this conditioned nature that unfortunately I take seriously. Does that make sense? So that can be accommodated, and therefore one understands that the pure devotional platform is the ultimate, and the other one has to be brought in line with that and not vice versa. Then one can be a very balanced, natural, there's another term for it, adjusted personality. Because you know what you are. I have these attachments, therefore I'm dealing with it. Yes?
Would that be called
self-realized? Yes, you just mentioned it's called self-realized. Because self is on all levels. The body, the mind, the intelligence, the soul. Yeah, you realize what you're attached to. So you're realizing what it is. So that's the whole point is the society's self-realization. That's our whole purpose. So that includes recognizing materially what the self is, and then you're engaged. If you don't know, how do you engage yourself? Right? It means we see so many times devotees who go to Prabhupada and say, Prabhupada, what can I do for you? And Prabhupada would say, what do you want to do? Right? Because you have a conditioned nature. What things are important to you? Because by engaging in those, your body, your mind, your words are going to be fully engaged. So you need to know who you are. So that's actually self-realization. It may not be, it's, maybe we can't say the realization has come to the topmost platform of Raja Bhakti. But it is self-realization, right? The newest person has some level of self-realization. That's why they join. They understand I'm the soul, I'm not the body. I don't belong here, I belong, you know, going back to Godhead. Krishna is God, I'm his servant. They have that self-realization. So acknowledging the self on all its levels, but at the same time understanding from the acharyas what is the prominence or what is the preference or predominance, then you make that. Means it may be that going back to Godhead is your prominent desire, but because of other desires, they take up more space. Does that make some sense? You know, you chant your 16 rounds, that's to please Krishna. That only takes you an hour and a half or 2 hours. But taking care of your family and all that may take you, you know, 8, 10, 12 hours. But it's, even though time-wise it seems to be prominent, as far as your own personal values goes, it's secondary. Does that make sense? So these are things where everybody themselves has to look at and be very, very honest. Sometimes hard, but it's okay. You know, there's no right answer. You know, so many times you ask a question, and it says, "Dhruva." Yeah, like that. He's giving the example of someone who had a desire, as the Sakam Bhakta. He had a desire for something, but he approached the Lord. So his service to the Lord, that itself was great. But behind it was that desire. But when he saw the Lord, then he saw what's the use. That's the point of it. That's the beauty of it. Because we're taking that Krishna is bound by the rule itself because of the influence of karma mimamsa. We think that by my activity, therefore I am getting Krishna and therefore I am getting pure devotional service. By my sadhana. Right? But actually it's by Krishna's mercy. Krishna says, you do these activities, you'll please me. So it's that you've made the endeavor to do that and it pleases him. It's not that you've perfected the activity. Right? If your conditioned nature is such, you can perfect the activity, you should. You know, Hanuman should lift tops of mountains. Otherwise, if he got down on the bank of the ocean there and started with his fingers flicking and little grains of sand, Ramachandra would probably ask, hello? Like that, we, you know, the bridge is big. Like that, no, we're working on it here. You know, we'll get it. So, therefore, it's... Yeah. So one should be fully, this is the thing, is it's just you intelligently look at it. So it's buddhi yoga, using the intelligence to engage your intellectual and emotional, physical needs in the Lord's service. But your overall goal is pure unalloyed devotional service. Does that make sense? No? Yeah. So then another, right? So these points, even though this is second canto, so what's here is very, very essential. Prabhupada put everything into the first two cantos. So everything that we need is in these cantos for going back to Godhead. So it's very succinctly spoken, but we'll see is the principles are very, very broad in their application. One simple point can have so much effect. So another thing he's showing is that giving example of devotional service is performed, you get benefit. It's not lost. So he gives comparison to charity. Charity given, you always get benefit back. This quote that Prabhupada is bringing is directly out of Manasamhita. You give, tenth chapter. So that you give in charity, whatever you give, even if the person's not very qualified, you'll get back the equal amount. You give to someone who's half qualified, means they're from a Brahmin family, they present themselves as a Brahmin, but they don't really know what's going on. Right? You get double. Right? They're a Brahmin, you're giving to a Brahmin. The Brahmin is actually qualified, then 100,000 times the benefit comes back. So it jumps quite, it's quite a good parabolic curve on this. The investment is pretty good, right? Then, if the Brahmin is self-realized, one who can lead one on the path, then unlimited. Right? Therefore, one can understand is that, Bowery bum who careened into the 22nd Avenue with a roll of toilet paper, and stuck it in the bathroom as an offering to Prabhupada, even the position of Indra would not be able to balance out the service rendered as far as mundane, return. Like that. So then, the point is that devotional service rendered in association of devotees, to that degree that you're conscious of it, to that degree the return is great. And we see the return goes up very fast. But whatever it is, it's never lost. Like that. So this is to give us faith in that. So it says guaranteed eternal life. It's just a matter of when we're willing to accept it. That's all. We just have to accept. We just have to surrender. Surrender means you accept. So if we haven't surrendered, we don't accept. It's right there. You can take it. We're not surrendering, so we don't take it. So it's that, it's actually that simple in principle. Because of attachment, of course, then the application is a little bit more difficult. But at least if you understand the principle is like that, then it makes it very easy to make that endeavor and try to gain it. Okay. Yeah, here. Udharadi means one who has a broader outlook. People with desires for material enjoyment worship small demigods, and such intelligence is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 7.20 as Hrit Jnana, the intelligence of one who has lost his senses. One cannot obtain any result from demigods without getting sanction from the Supreme Lord. Therefore, a person with a broader outlook can see that the ultimate authority is the Lord, even for material benefits. Under the circumstances, one with a broader outlook, even with a desire for material enjoyment or for liberation, should take to the worship of the Lord directly. Right? It means that even in that relation, it's direct that you're going to Him. And everyone, whether akama, sakama, or mokshakama, should worship the Lord with great expedience. This implies that bhakti yoga may be perfectly administered without any mixture of karma and jnana, as the unmixed sunray is very forceful and is therefore called tivra. Similarly, unmixed bhakti yoga, hearing, chanting, etc., may be performed by one and all, regardless of inner motive. Is that right? So in other words, that your inner motive means these are just the conditioning that's there, but compared to the power of devotional service, it's insignificant. As long as you put it that way. It is, but still it's a matter of you recognizing. You can, despite the power of devotional service, take your material conditioning more seriously. But that's just you. That's not God. God takes it the other way around. Right? So therefore, even if it's there, he's the one that you have to go to. But why go to him for that? Probably makes it. It means the beggar goes to Birla, asks him for 10 paisa. Now, he can surely give you 10 paisa. But Prabhupada's point is, why go to Birla for 10 paisa? Go to him for lakhs or crores. So as you're going to Krishna, you can go to him, get all your material things, because it's coming from him anyway. So why go to someone else? Because that's where you're getting it from. But since you've already gone there, then like Dhruva Maharaj, he's gone there. But then he realizes when he actually gets there, why ask this person for that? Just you should ask for the top. So your impetus may be these lower, but ultimately when you mature, then they're given up. But anything can be a springboard for it. That's the thing. Devotional service is so perfect, anything can be the cause for progression. Right? The gopis is just out of desire. Then they come to the perfectional platform. Right? Like that. Or someone out of fear, or someone out like Kaliyana, he was angry, he was envious, but then in contact with Krishna, that went away. Does that make some sense? So, like this, devotional service is more powerful than anything. But to get the benefit, full benefit, one will get benefit whether you're aware or not. But if the more you're aware, in other words, just like the person who's qualified, who you're giving charity to, the greater the benefit you'll get. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. And this point about the recognizing our material desires or motives, is the difference between recognizing and trying to place yourself in a situation to be purified of them and actually be cheated by them have something to do with the execution of devotional service in a different option? Sometimes we have things that really doesn't work.
Okay, so question is that in trying to work out the needs in that, does that also, is it connected with the ashrams? That would be part of it, but that's not the essence of it. That was a form of it.
Like sometimes we have some desire, but how do you become purified in it when the etiquette or the rules of where you're situated perform your devotion, so there's no recognizing allowing that type of...
Oh, okay. Okay, so then someone has a conditioned nature and there's a need to take care of that, but how do they do it if their ashram restricts that? Is that better?
I'm sorry. He asked me to give a concrete example. Does he name one too? I didn't hear from
him. Okay, yeah.
Like somebody may be in an uncharted ashram and have sex desire, love.
Okay. So the example is being given, let's say you have a brahmachari and there's desire. So then that desire can't be fulfilled in the brahmachari ashram, but it's better fulfilled in the grihastha ashram. So then how do you deal with this? Every ashram has its, in dealing with means, first one has to recognize what's there and to see what degree. Because there is so many desires may be there from so many lifetimes, but sometimes desire may just be an interest, so it can actually be taken care of by hearing or seeing. One doesn't have to go through. You know, you heard about it, sounds interesting, household life, but then you hear about more detail of it and the difficulties of it, responsibilities, and you think, well, actually, it doesn't balance for me. the endeavor to put in and what the returns, it's not worth it and is able to be given up. Like that. So that, or it sounds interesting, you've heard all the theory of it, and it does, there is a doubt that it's worth it, but still that desire is there. But then by looking around and seeing others in the ashram, then it becomes prominent to you what is the joys and, you know, I say, less lack of joys. Then, it's just funny because he's saying it, just I thought of, what's his name? Jay Dwaitamars' seminar, The Hopes and Horrors, you know, but that was. So it's, you see that it doesn't balance for you. You saw it, then you're able to give it up. But if not, but if those two don't work, then one needs to go there and closely see it by experience. But having accepted that, there's a responsibility. It's not that, okay, when I get the theory of it, no, it has to be the value of it. Because the whole point is in the Varnashram system, you're trying to develop the value, which means realization. Intellectual understanding is not enough. That's what you should be performing the activity with. So the grihastha, he's been married for the last 15 years, then he understands that this is crazy, and he thinks, now it's time for me to leave and take vanaprastha, is a mistake. He should have been, for the last 15 years, been performing his duties as a grihastha with that understanding that there's nothing here anyway, but I think there is. Therefore, I'm performing the duties so that what results I think are important are coming. Right? I think being with women and their pleasure is my satisfaction and is something important. Therefore, I should perform those duties that actually do please women. Right? Otherwise, how am I going to see that? And how am I going to, therefore, compare it to the knowledge that I have that actually is not worth it? And compare that to the devotional service that I'm rendering and the taste that's coming from there. If I get a full experience out of the devotional service, and I compare to that a full experience on the material platform of the interaction with the woman, they don't compare. At the moment, they seem very great, but after the moment, you think back and you go, there's nothing really there on the material platform. But you think back on the spiritual, it has just as much importance as it did at the moment. So then, many examples of that, one starts to then get the realization that it's not there. The difficulty is there's the thought, if I perform it out of duty, there's no taste. But we are dealing with dead matter here. So the taste only comes when you do what Krishna says you should do. Right? He's the one that provides the taste. Right? That's the thing. You do what he wants you to, you get the result. So, therefore, the duty is the actual only way to get what you want. If you're getting without it, you say, no, but I'm doing things that are not according to scripture, I'm getting what I want. That's only because previously you did so much activity according to scripture, you still have a little bit left in this life that is coming through. Your lack of doing the proper activity is not giving you the result now. That's what's going to give you result in the future. So you may be getting it now, but in the future you're not going to get anything. That's the mistake. Right. That's the whole point. Does that make some sense? So therefore, everything has its position. Then, therefore, the brahmachari has to see, okay, the desire is there, but how is it going to work? Right? Means something rare is valuable. Right? People who are just commonly lusty and after women, that's pretty common. You know, it's like 99.99%. So someone who is interested but has controlled senses, that's rare. Right there you make yourself valuable to women. Right? Why is a first-class brahmachari a first-class grihastha? Because the first-class brahmachari is what the women are looking for. Third-class, amen. They're all like that. First class, that's rare. So even if you want to fulfill those desires, how are you going to fulfill it? You can't be happy in the grihastha ashram unless you please a woman. Women aren't pleased unless you make that endeavor. Women aren't going to serve unless you're worth serving. A guy who's just lusty, what's the use? What's the worth? Someone who's control has desire, but is controlling that, is focusing that, is engaging in Krishna service, that's worth serving. Therefore, if I want to be a good grihastha, I better make a really serious attempt to be a very good brahmachari. For a plan, time. Like, okay, I could last 3 years at this. So those 3 years, I'm going to give it my best. Then after that, then the mind is peaceful because it knows after 3 years, I'll get married. Even if it's being arranged that the girl's there, then mind's peaceful. Okay, it's there. When my 3 years is up, then the girl's there. Rather than, oh, the girl's there, so hey, why bother anymore? These are common mistakes. So then you get... So, but that is, we're dealing with intelligence here. But the difficulty is when we deal, especially with grihastha ashram, we don't like to use intelligence, we like to use the sentiment. Because the intelligence is thought it won't give the taste, the sentiment gives the taste. You know, it's just like when girls say, well, unless you really love the person, how can you marry them? But the point is how do you know who you're marrying? You know, you can have attraction, you can have attachment, but... if you don't know them, and only once you're married can you really know them. You know? Yes, sir. Yes. A point has been made that the divorce courts are full of people who used to love each other. Like that. So it is by performance of duties, the common, because you can always have the common goal of performance of duties, because you're husband or wife. That affection, that love, that may come and go, but the duties remain. And if the duties are performed, attachment is there. Right? If you think about it, anything that works nicely, any possession you have, any situation you're in, any activity, if it works well, you become attached to it. Yes or no? Therefore, if husband and wife work cooperatively together, they will become attached. It's guaranteed. So that's the Vedic standard. Then you'll know. Because otherwise, the sentiment, there's the fear that the knowledge covers the sentiment, removes the sentiment, because it removes the mystique, I won't enjoy anymore. But actually, lower levels of enjoyment, animal levels of enjoyment, yes, will be cleared off. That spontaneous just desire will be cleared away. Then you'll come to the human platform, which is higher. Right? Otherwise, why does Indra enjoy more than us? Or Brahma more than him. Right? So that's the point. And Brahma's got the most knowledge, but he's the one who has the most happiness. It's as good as it gets with Lord Brahma. It doesn't get better than that in this place. And he knows everything. He knows exactly down to the atom how it functions. So that's the human being. The animal is just the gut reactions and all that. That creates the fullness and intensity. But human beings, it's through knowledge and performance that connecting it to Krishna, then it works. Is this getting where? It was, that's more general detail. Okay, last question, and we'll yes.
And
there
may be special practices where you speak to one to help propagate this movement
of great movement. Yes, means there's the question maybe is there those who. Grihasthas, that they want to have very good quality children. So that element's there. That should be a underlying principle anyway, ideally. But if not, whatever. So that may be. But still, in that, it's that they want to take part in that. You know, it's that they want to have the child, but they want to be involved in the raising of that child. So that's their. That, you know what I'm saying? In other words, that's their mundane need that's there. Very pious, very good, because then you can raise high quality devotees. That's very important. So their motive may be a little higher than just desire. But still, something's there. That's what Prabhupada said. It's a gold chain, so that's better, because the gold chain is very easily engaged in the Lord's service, but still it's a chain. So for looking at others, one will look from that perspective. Looking at oneself, one always tries to find actually what's the underlying motive. Does that make sense? Like that. So then we'll end here, and then we can continue if anyone wants with questions for a few minutes afterwards. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jaina Daigoda Prayana. We'll just fast forward. Just let everybody go for a minute. Something that can be answered publicly? Okay, so that's right. Yeah, well, ask the question, and then we can. Yeah, because that's the purpose. It's his mission. So him or his mission are no different. Yeah, because the one is, it's a Vapu and Vani. So in other words, you've given to the Vani. The sentiment is you want to give to the Vapu. Yeah, so it's the same. You're saying that. Life goes nice and smoothly. It creates attachment if it goes smoothly, yes. So then what to do? That is a very interesting point, is that, okay, life is not going smoothly, so that breaks down attachment, so it's easier to discern the Krishna. Life goes nicely, very pious, develops attachment, very hard to discern the Krishna. So how do you find this balance? One has to be very careful. Is that the point? Is that one tries? One knows that one has desires, but one tries to perform those activities, fulfilling those desires, without the result being for oneself. So the idea is you are performing the activity so you get the experience of it, right? But being that it's you experiencing it, you want to claim it for yourself. That's where the weakness is. The experience of it isn't the problem, it's the claiming that's the problem. Right? So if the activity is performed but for pleasing Krishna, then the experience is gained and it brings you closer to Krishna. At the same time, it also then tends to work to remove that desire. Right? Because Krishna is very expert. He fulfills desire in such a way to remove it. Does that make some sense? Now one could, so therefore one to say, well, therefore I shouldn't act in a pious way. But how is that pleasing to Krishna? Ultimately, you can say, ultimately their motive, therefore devotees who avoid acting properly because they think it's Maya, because they don't want to be in Maya, in that regard it pleases Krishna. You know, the sentiment's nice. But because they have those desires many times, not let's say many times, but it can happen, that need for that is so strong that it eventually comes up later. And then they get so distracted from like, you know, you go to any old yatra, and it's like you can count X amount of you know, ex-GBCs, sannyasis, temple presidents, regional secretaries, temple commanders, sankirtan leaders, very large list. And if you compare it what they're doing at present, it may not seem to be very great. That's because they ignored it. So that's what we're talking about, is if we recognize it, we neither ignore it nor make it prominent. So what's happening is we're ignoring it or making it prominent. But the devotional process is, you don't ignore it, you don't make it prominent. Right? Because you always have... So that one is the one that, unless you hear it from Shastri, you'll never think it exists. Right? Does that make sense? Just like Amanina Mana Dana, right? Respecting others, not desiring any respect for yourself. Okay, now of course everyone's going to agree that that person who respects nobody expects all respect for themselves. That's low class. Everyone from every community will basically say that's correct. Right? It's not a good thing to do like that. Right? Now you move into your sophisticated political society. They will say, I respect everybody else, but they should also reciprocate that and respect me. Right? And that will be taken as a very dignified, normal way of, you know, sophisticated social life. Right? That's also common. More refined. A little bit more than that, but you can intellectually understand it, but very few people practice it. You know, because it doesn't, because it's not progressive politically or economically. Is the intellectual, they will say, it's just a put on that somebody should be respected because we're all not on this material platform. So I don't respect anybody, but I don't expect any respect back. Right? You know, some like, what is it, the other, Diogenes, he's like that. You don't have to respect him, but he's not, Alexander comes, who cares? But Alexander doesn't have to say anything nice about him either. You know, it's like, who cares? This material world's useless. Right? So that for a few intellectuals makes sense. Right? For those who are intelligent about the material world, the other one makes sense. Idiots, then they think, you know, they're going to get everything and not give anything back. Now, as an option, that I will respect everybody, but I will not expect any respect back. That's something that's not, it's unheard of. Right? That's kind of like things that are, you know, amazing. You know, you hear here and there of personalities like that. You know, if they're in India, they're great sadhus. If they're in the West, then they're canonized. Right? You know, so like that. Is that it's just so, it's just has, in other words, the other three are part of the social scene. There's the two extremes and then there's the middle. Right? But this one is considered out of the picture. It's not even part of the material scene. That the person respects everyone and expects no respect, it will always be taken as spiritual. Not even as pious. Pious is I respect you, you respect me. Okay, you know, philosophical is I don't respect you, you don't have to respect me. You know, uncultured, I don't respect anybody, but everybody should respect me. Right? But the other one is in another category. So without the Shastra, we wouldn't know it exists. That's the point. So in all these things, without the Shastra, we won't know. So here it is recognize your material desires, make some endeavor to fulfill those material desires without the desire for the result. And making that endeavor simply because you want to please Krishna. That I have this desire, so therefore I'm engaging in your service. And without Shastra, you'll never know that's an option. So that's why it's necessary to hear from Scripture. That's where, if one doesn't know that, one has a shortfall. Therefore, one will do the natural thing is full-time devotional service, this and that, neglect the family. And then when you get older, then, you know, hey, I, you know, I've neglected the family, I've been a rat bag, I should put in the proper time, try to reconcile this and make the wife and kids feel good. Right? But it's supposed to be that you're dealing with them together and finding that balance. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the actual process. You know, but of the two, then of the two extreme material kind of approaches, better the fully absorbed, because you've done it. It's there, it never goes away. So at least they've done it. So they're better than the household that never made that surrender, never made that step to fully just engage themselves. So they're better. Right? Like that. Does that make some sense? How to balance between, you know, fully absorbed in devotional service and the pure devotee syndrome. Pure devotee syndrome is not a problem, really. It just means that you only create social problems for others involved in your ring of attachment due to your not recognizing your attachment because you're fully absorbed in devotional service at the same time maintaining all those attachments and expecting everybody else to do it. Does that make sense? You make the new house. I gave this example to someone today. You make the new house, but because the house is actually Maya, but you want the new house, but it's actually Maya, so I'm in the temple all day doing devotional service business, so therefore I'm not Maya, but all those others involved in my family, they should be taking care of the house. So in other words, you're just going to, it's not going to be spiritual disruption so much, it's going to be social disruption. In other words, everybody else around you will be wondering why you're so trippy about things that make absolutely no sense. You're talking about how you've got to be fully absorbed, therefore they've got to do the housework. But it's their housework. You know what I'm saying? It's your housework. And you're throwing a bit, so you want the housework done and the devotional service done. So I'm going to do the devotional service, you're going to do the housework. At the same time as I'm demanding that you be fully absorbed in devotional service. Right? But you've got to balance this other thing. Does that make some sense? It doesn't make sense. So that's the problem with that. So the point is you work out, if it's important to you, then you take care of it. You want a house, you've got to take care of it. You want a wife, you've got to take care of it. You want clothes, you've got to take care of it. You got money, you've got to take care of it. Whatever it is that you need, you have to take care of it. You don't take care of it, why have it? That's irresponsible. That's why, therefore, depending upon how valuable it is, therefore, in devotional service, you keep to that minimum. The house is not valuable to me, but I like the security of having a place that I could call my own so I can keep my stuff there and know it's going to be there when I come back at night. It won't be that some other brahmachari or brahmacharini moved it somewhere else because they decided that's the perfect spot for their, you know, stuff. So therefore you have the smallest possible place that you can maintain. Okay, I can put aside 20 minutes a day for this house. So then you only have a house that you can take care of in 20 minutes. Does that make sense? So like that, you can't have it, so well, I like this, and I like the elaborate house, and all the furnishings, and all this, and everything just right, perfect, and that, plus plenty of stuff to fill it out, but you know, I'm not going to take care of it, and everybody else should take care of it, and they should understand, and these are the things that, you know, promote, you know, artificial sannyas. Like that. Because it makes no sense, and you're dealing with a person that you absolutely cannot work with, because they won't use their intelligence. They're talking intelligence, but it's just pure sentiment. You know, so these are difficulties. So that's why you recognize, I need this much, so take care of it. If it's not, then change it. If I don't want to spend the 1 hour a day taking care of the house, then why do you have such a big house? right? Half an hour would half the size of the house. 15 minutes, a quarter the size of the house. You know, you can get it right in. A closet will take you 5 minutes to straighten up. Right? I've heard of many temple presidents living out of the closet, right? They got a closet in their office and they live in the closet, you know? So, hey, they take care of the closet and the temple commander takes care of the office. So, it works. Right? I'm not sure if the wife also gets a closet, but, you know, but, does that make sense? So, that's the thing, is just that Shyamasundara Prabhu pointed out, self-realization, what it is that you need. Just recognize that instead of running away from it. It's there, but don't, because it's there, it's me. No, it's not you. It's the mind. It's the conditioned nature. That's why you don't, if one can't deal with it on that mature level, better don't. Main point is being maximally engaged in Krishna's service. So better be maximally engaged in Krishna's service than the so-called, I'm dealing with me and not engaged in devotional service. I've heard of this. A devotee's driving down the road to go out on Sankirtan, big collectors, collected, you know, $500,000 for the society, and then just something, he's thinking this, that, and something just clicks in his mind and goes, but what about me? You know, it's been 20 years and I have no house, no facility, no respect. You know, the temple president's a guy younger than me, you know, and this, and nobody cares about me, and then the car just kind of like turns, and then they go somewhere else, and then you want, hey, what happened to them? And then 3 months later, 6 months later, you find they're, you know, somewhere else doing business and living a life, you know. Right. Does that make sense? So, like that is because not recognizing is you have that need, so you need that. So then work for it. Then, you know, you need to, so then why not? Then why are you doing for it? Why does it have to be given to you? Earn it. On the material platform, deserve, then desire. On the spiritual platform, it's first desire, then it'll come to the point where you deserve. If you don't desire, you won't get there. You know, here, if you desire it, then earn it. That's the way the material world is. So if you're the senior man in the temple, but no one recognizes that, then you must be doing something wrong. And you can say, well, they're all untrained. Well, you're the senior man. Aren't you supposed to be training them? No, but they should know I'm the same. Prabhupada stood in line to go to the bathroom at 26-second Avenue. He didn't say, hey, I'm the Nitya Siddha, and I came down here with all you, you know, potheads, you know, like that. And, you know, let's have a little respect, right? That's good. R-E-S-P, I don't even know how to sound that. You know, no. You know, and he didn't even pull any lower card. He didn't play, well, okay, let's put aside the Nitya Siddha, we don't want anyone to know that one. But at least we're the founder Acharya, right? Just like that. Okay, we don't want anyone to know that one. Okay, we are the Acharya. No, okay, let's, okay, we're the Guru. Well, okay, we're the Sannyasi. No, he didn't pull any of it. He didn't even pull, I'm older than you guys. You know, I'm old enough to be your grandfather, so hey. So, that's what and he trained them. It was months later. I've told this story before. I forget who it was. Who was saying? It was Subal or... I think it was... I'm not sure it wasn't the kid who asked about he needed money for the petrol. You know, burn himself. Baba said, how much you need? And he said, you know, enough for... You know, he said, how much you need? A gallon? How much do you want? And he said, 30 cents when it was only like 10 cents. He said, then I knew he was crazy. Because he needed more money than it actually cost. You know, if he's actually... intelligent, you know, I need this much money, and like that. So, because he was spaced out, everyone would come up to Prabhupada's room, you know, here he goes up to the room, and they would all take prasad, right? And then, so you see in Leelamrita, that's there, the devotees are downstairs, they take prasad, and then they're downstairs, you know, discussing about Prabhupada, this and that, right? But you'll never notice in Leelamrita anybody washing the floors or cleaning the pots. Why? Because Prabhupada was doing it. He was doing the marketing, he was doing the cutting, he was doing the cooking, he was doing the cleaning, he was doing the serving, he was doing everything. So this one person, he was brand new, so he didn't know the scene. He came up, they was invited upstairs, and, you know, they took the shot, and then he didn't know now it's time to split and go back downstairs and, you know, absorb yourself in your devotional activities. So he just sat there, and he saw Prabhupada coming, picking up the pots, just sat, taking to the kitchen, doing things. So just, you know, ask, you need some help. So then you help clean up. Before that, it was always done by Prabhupada. And only after that, they probably say, hey, where were you? Oh, I was helping Prabhupada clean up. It was kind of like, oh, wow. You know, because I mean, you know, there's a good chance that most boys don't know that, you know, food, that 15 minutes of food's got a couple of hours of other, you know, surrounding connected activities, you know, of cooking and cleaning. Like that. So that's the... So they were, they didn't go to Gurukul, they didn't know. You know, so they... Is that... So... So that's the trick, is to find the balances that, okay, I need these, then these are the practical ways to apply that, but I only want to spend this much time. Therefore, then I got to spread it out. Take less over a longer period, or just take less in general, and just, you know what I'm saying? That's the thing. You want to have the big fancy house, the cars, the fancy looking lady, the this, that, then great, but then you got to buy it. It means you got to have the cash, right? And it's not that the world owes it to you, right? Like that, you got to get it yourself. You want to get it. You don't want it, then hey. And we got God brothers who are millionaires, so go out and get it. You know, no, I've done so much service to the temple. Okay, that's how many? 65. Then you know you can retire and get the gold watch and. And a pension. Okay, but you want, you know, Indra today, you know. I put in my service, I work hard for 10 years and I want, you know, full facilities. You know, if you retire from the business, they don't keep you on the payroll of the, you know, the executives, right? They give you something that's, you know, you can live, right? The devotee wants the world, right? Does that make sense? So that's the problem. Is that if we're being real, then hey, how many God brothers do we have in the 65? Right? Very few. So where's the retirement? You know? But that's the thing. They've done all, you know. Unless you walk in with a 6-figure income, then hey, it's not worth it. But if you said, hey, go out and get a job, they might be working in a petrol station, growing square tomatoes. You know. So that's the... We have to be realistic from all sides. Then we can make it work. You know, that's the thing, is to find the balance of what do I need and how to fulfill it. What am I working? Then we can avoid the pure devotee. Because the pure devotee is, in other words, the pure devotee syndrome is ignoring other elements. Right? But if you've made a plan and that's absorbed how much you can be and all that, also generally the tendency you would have to throw in another quality of the pure devotee syndrome is pride. They think they're better than everybody else. Only they're engaged in devotional service. Right? Everybody else is not. Does that make sense? So that's the point, yes.
Krishna Chakravarti gives the technical term for what we call impure devotee syndrome.
Oh, wow, great.
It's the first primary stage of Anishu Bhakti. It's called Utsahamayi.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Utsahamayi. Means is their example is given. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives the definition of that as in devotional service in Narta Nibriti, the first stage is Utsahamayi, where one, the example is given, the child goes to the school the first day, they come back knowing A, B, and C, and they figure that they're the greatest pundit the world has ever known, and they're so proud of it and all this, so like that. So that's, yes. That's it. So does that make sense? So it's an attitude. Being absorbed in devotional service and this and that, that's good. And if somebody is absorbed, even if it is on that platform, no one should break it down. It's also improper for someone who is not, you're not dependent upon, to harass you for your absorption in devotional service, because any devotional service performed is not lost. So then to bother others because, they're just being a pure devotee, that's also uncultured, because if it's done for Krishna, it's eternal. So they're being the pure devotee for Krishna, and you're being the not pure devotee for who? So who's getting the eternal benefit? So, because the question was on how to avoid being one, therefore then we commented on that side. So that was meant for yourself. But for others, then any service rendered and any absorption that's there, if you have a closeness to them, or you are an authority for them, you could point out, well, I think maybe are you considering all aspects of your life? You know, you're here in the temple 24/7, but you know, I'm hearing from the grapevine that your family is very dissatisfied and are, you know, thinking of leaving here. You know, then what's going to happen to your service? So, like that, then that can be pointed out so they can come to a proper balance. But if someone is absorbed, it doesn't matter. That's perfection. Because technically, means in other words, for others, we use this very broad-minded, and anything is there. Because otherwise, if we're thinking otherwise, but it's not up to the standard, then we'd have to ask, are we up to the standard? Because technically speaking, according to also Vishwanath, then prema is devotional service. Anything less than that is not devotional service. So never kid yourself you're on a higher platform of devotional service, because devotional service starts at prema. You can be at a higher stage of anartha nidriti, you know, in the process of those, you know, shraddha to prema. But if you want to throw in the word devotional service, then according to Vishwanath, that's prema. So Vishwanath is showing how we apply it in our own life. Right? How do I contemplate it in my life, apply it in my life, or for those that are dependent upon it? Right? Baladev gives the angle of the preacher, saying the same thing, but because it's connected to devotional service, therefore it's as good as devotional service. It's our definition of absolute. I just connected two things. This definition of absolute is the definition of absolute for us as jivas is iron and fire. Because that's what we're jivas, we're tatastha shakti, but we'll get in the fire of the antaranga shakti. So that's for us, then we're absolute. So then, if we apply that in this situation, then, because it's in the fire of absolute devotional service, therefore it becomes as good as. Right? Does that make sense? Now, if we're going to apply that, well, the leaders or the other devotees, they have material motive, they're not pure unalloyed devotees, then you have to, if you're going to click out of Baladev's view and click into Vishwanath's, great, you have to apply that on yourself also. So therefore, yeah, they're not, you know, they're not really senior, this and that. But then according to that, you're not a devotee either. Because as soon as the iron is taken out of the fire, it's iron. That includes you. Otherwise you fall into the all persons should respect me and understand me, and I'm the victim and everybody else I don't have to respect. Does that make sense? So we have to thank Laji for bringing out the balance here. So we have a tendency to take one thing and get so much into it, the context of it becomes forgotten. Like that. So the principle is that for ourselves, we look at, try to see that we're not overbalancing things for some motive. But even if we are, at least if it's being done in connection with Krishna, it's there. It won't be lost. But we run the risk of later in life, an embarrassing time in life, we may find our material desires looking at us in the face, and we'll have to take the humble position. But of course, because we're senior, we won't take the humble position, but we will fulfill our desires. Like that. We'll create a philosophy or, you know, something to show that we're okay. I'm okay, you're maybe okay. But, you know, it's a very popular philosophy these days. It's a natural. Is that okay? Anything else? Or? Yes. Scriptural guidance. Is that fulfilled by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, scriptural guidance? By Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, the histories, Bhagavatam's the history in your Mahabharata, Krishna book. Then you see how it's applied. Chaitanya Charitamrita. That's why Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered higher, because you see that it's applied. And it's applied in our context as Gaudiyas. Right? It means Dhruva Maharaj is not, would be known as a Vaishnava, but not as a Gaudiya. You know, but Chaitanya Charitamrita is applying all those points of the Bhagavatam as a Gaudiya. So therefore, that takes on something special. But you have to use your intelligence, right? When you give, let's say you have something, it can apply to a million different situations. But you pick something prominent that's appropriate for the audience. It gets the point across. Right? Now, the audience then has to take that, contemplate it, and apply it to the other million opportunities that are there, that come up in their life. Right? So the scriptures talk about everything. But it's just a matter of seeing it. Right? Like we think, the point in Kasyapa and Aditi, you know, in the Payavrata and all that, is that you have, means, is the point of that, your absorption, perfection is connecting it fully to Krishna. You could say that is the main point. So they want to have a child as Prajapati, they connect that fully to Krishna. So their child is Krishna. Right, Vamanadeva is a child. In that, then we see now, in that, austerity has to be performed to get any good result. So then you see Payavrata is performed. Right? Then you see in that she has a question about, you know, this, but it's coming up from envy. It's not coming up from piety. And the husband then deals, because he understands women are like that, six times as envious, so sometimes they become overwhelmed. He doesn't get on the case, why being so trippy, this, that. No. It means that's like telling, you know, saying, why does the dog bark? The bird flies. No. So, that will come up. You don't like it, don't get involved. Right? You know, you don't like fleas, don't get a dog. You know what I'm saying? You don't like, you know, there may be no fleas, but you have to deal with it. You have to bathe, you have to put the powder, you have to this, you have to that, you have to watch out. So there's no fleas because you know how to get rid of them. So there's no envy and all that because you know how to get rid of it. Not just saying, you know, be gone. And it's like, you know, some Baptist minister, you know, that it just goes away. You know, it's like you have to know how to make it go away. And it doesn't mean, just because you got away with it today, the dog has no fleas, doesn't mean it doesn't pick some up at the neighbor's lawn and then brings them back tomorrow. You know what I'm saying? So this is how you have to apply things. So, therefore, it came from that, but how did Kasyapa dealt? He dealt very gently, understanding the woman's nature, and then explained to her how that's there, but if you really want to fulfill your desire, you have to go to the Lord. And knowing that if you worship the Lord, you fulfill your desire at the same time you remove all these bad qualities. So the husband, instead of getting on her case and then having her, you know, have nothing to do with the children and this and that and all that. You know what I'm saying? Because the children were connected with the nice relationship with the husband, but the relationship with the husband is not nice now, so she wouldn't want the children anyway because they would remind them of him. Right? So, therefore, she doesn't want the children. So, to avoid all that, and that's worse than having to deal with the original wanting the children out of social prestige. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, then you see how he deals, what language he uses. You look at it, it's the most gentle language, very intelligent, very down to earth, but very much in consideration of the nature of his wife. And what does it result in? Her doing a 12-day fast. Women don't like to do austerity. 12-day fast. So unless they see the benefit in it, you know, then they'll do it, right? You know, it's like, does that make sense? Some men will poke holes in their body and so-called look more beautiful, right? But it's a few men. Women, all women will do it. So it's an austerity. Serious. You know? But they're willing to do it. Because they see the benefit. So she now sees the benefit, so that she's been convinced of a higher principle. So how did he do that? Yelling, screaming, preaching? No. Very gently, nice, caring. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point. He was the same with Diti. Right? She had the opposite. It was also the same thing, prestigious, that, but her method was not necessarily so pious. Still, he was talking nicely and trying to convince her. Right? So we see is that, so that's, but that's not the point the Bhagavatam is making. The Bhagavatam is the perfection of all the Vedic literature. So because it's the perfection, it contains everything the other Vedic literatures have, but that's not the point. The point is that whatever you want, its perfection is found in connection with the Lord. That's the point. And therefore you follow the Lord's process to fulfill your need, and that way please the Lord through your service. But to do that, we must act as human beings. And there's a culture, there's an etiquette. Does that make sense? So therefore everything is there in the scriptures. But it's just a matter of we're able to take it. The ghee is there in the milk. But every time you want it, you have to churn it. Oh, I churned it yesterday. Why it's not coming today? Oh, I did sannyasa so long. Why am I not getting respect today? Well, hello, we haven't done any service for 2 years. No, but I used to be the temple president, you know, 20 years ago when the temple was first started in there, and Prabhupada told me how to do it. Great, but where have you been for the last 20 years? So how do you think you just walk in and just say, here I am, now listen to me. So you want it, you got to get it every time. Every time you want the ghee out of the milk, you got to churn it. Fortunately, then, the Bhagavatam has already been churned. But now at least you have to pick it up and put it in your mouth. But the last bite I picked up, do I have to do it again? Every bite, and then then you have to chew, then you have to swallow. Hey, there's a lot of work going on. Does that make sense? We don't have so many access. No, but the Bhagavatam's there. You can rely on if you're smart. But Vaishnavism is meant for intelligent people. Intelligent people become devotees. That means the devotees have the intelligence to apply it. It's just whether they want to maintain their mundane identity of being not so intelligent. They're attached to being less intelligent. You know, I mean, it works for blondes, but I mean, other than that, it's better to use your brains, you know. Does that make sense? Bhagavatam has everything. Gita has everything. You know, Mahabharata has everything. But the thing is the Mahabharata can only be approached once you know exactly how Bhagavad Gita and everything else works. Otherwise, you may make some mistakes. You won't know what the point is. Right? Because it's, you know, different age, so the same principle, but appropriate detail for the age. Right? The Arsatri is in Dvapara Yuga. Right? So they will apply the same principle in their way. Many times it's the same, sometimes it's different. Right? It's like you hear there's a big Rakshasa out there eating people, then you might want to lock the doors. You know, but no, but Bhima went out there and did that. Great. If you got, you know, if you can go out there and kill the demon, go do it, you know. But if you're not, then that was for Bhima. We don't see Arjuna going and fighting with Baka and Hidimba. No, that Bhima did. Right? Bhima doesn't fight with Karna. Arjuna does. Right? So like that, you have to just see it applies to you. You know? Like that. Oh, hey, yeah. I'm a Kshatriya. Oh, really? Why you're a Kshatriya? Yeah, because I'm into intoxication and women. You know, Kshatriyas, you know, all that. So it's, no, you're just a lazy bum. You know, no, but I guard the temple and that. Yeah, you're a Chokidar. That's a Shudra. So why do you say you're a Kshatriya? You know what I'm saying? So you have to be able to apply it properly. Does that make sense?
How do you really
How do we surrender our independence to Krishna?
Really.
They're really, the vastava vastu, the really real thing. Like that. Basically, thing. I mean, the really, really thing. Really real thing. Then we could use another advertisement gimmick called Just Do It. It's amazing. The most successful ones have caught on actual Vedic principles. That's why it works. It just has to be done. Means you have to just make that determination and despite all obstacles, just keep going until you're successful. Because surrender starts from there's two basic places where you can start the cycle. Right? The first, I mean, what we generally hear of is the theoretical. It's not exactly the external, but it would be, you start with understanding your servant of Krishna, you start with devotional service is enhanced by giving up those things that are improper and accepting those things that are proper, right? You give up what's unimportant, you accept what's important. Then you accept Krishna as your protector, and then, therefore, you're protected, you're maintained. Then, in this state, then you take on the mood of I am Krishna's servant, and in this way, then become meek and humble. Right? And so it's like that. That's taken as the first two are the neophyte, the second two are the madhyama, the third two are the uttama. Right? It means perfecting those. Same time as the cycle also, generally, if you want to take the process, it starts from identifying yourself as a devotee of Krishna, then becoming meek and humble. That brings you to the platform where now you're willing to give up what's improper, accept what's proper. You accept Krishna as your protector, and then as maintainer, because rasa is the real maintenance. Does that make sense? So then it means the qualities are manifest by these three. In other words, the neophyte is basically focusing on not doing what he shouldn't do and doing what he should do. The madhyama is saying that actually it's not my endeavors or that, but it's Krishna. He is protecting and maintaining despite what's going on around. I'm endeavoring, Krishna is giving. I'm not endeavoring, it's coming anyway, Krishna is giving it. And the uttama is just, I'm a devotee of Krishna and always make him humble. So that's their attitudes. But at the same time of operating the system, it starts with identifying yourself as a devotee. So you have to see, I am a devotee, how am I a devotee, what's a devotee, what's not a devotee. So these desires are not devotees. This is devotee. So therefore, the parts that are not devotees, then we have to, what's not able to be engaged in Krishna service, drop, and what can be, then engage. Notch down a peg. No. Okay.
When you, it makes you realize now you're still so much serving yourself and not serving Krishna.
Yes.
Even just by completely putting the spiritual master's desires and wishes before you, right? Even that's on a subtle level, it takes them like a smash and you're going to be in the value. So this is just continuing to you.
Okay. So is the. So in the process of elevation, that we make progress, or at least we're making progress, but at the same time, as along with the progress, the devotional progression, there's also, you know, the ego is also gaining position. Does that make sense? In other words, the ego is growing along with our devotional credit. So then when that gets smashed, and then we're pointed out where we're actually at, so is that process going to go on the rest of our life?
Yeah, how do we accelerate the process and give it up the process?
Okay, how do we accelerate the process? Intelligence. Because, see, actually, we make a division between intelligence, mind, and false ego. So you can understand their functions. Actually, they're one thing. Right? But it has different functions. So the element aspect of it that is false ego, that has one function. That of mind is another, intelligence is another. So the key to changing any of this is the intelligence. Because of them, the intelligence is the closest to the soul. Right? So, oh no, super soul. Both soul, super soul. It's the closest thing. So, if that is gained, then you can change the identity, ego, which then puts you on the spiritual platform. And change the values that the mind has, so instead of being attached to Maya, you're attached to Krishna, putting you on the spiritual platform. Understand? So the ego and this and the mind are the two. The intelligence is the active principle, right? And sambandha avideya prayojana. Then you can say is your sambandha is your ego. Your prayojana is the mind. And the avideya is the intelligence. Right? You understand? Because you start from who you are, right? So that you're starting from the ego, who you are. But to operate it you need the intelligence. Does that make sense? So like that. When the intelligence understands that I am actually servant of Krishna, I'm not the Lord and Master, you've already addressed my mind and false ego. Now you change with time, you value that, and then you take up by practice, then you actually identify yourself as servant of Krishna. Then the ego is less of a problem. But having done that, as the mind has to accept I'm not the enjoyer, is to be the enjoyer, you have to be the controller. So if there's a problem with controlling, then you know there's a problem with enjoyment. You understand? Like that. So if somebody is, you know what I'm saying, if that's the issue, it's because actually enjoyment is the issue. So they want to control it because they want you without controlling it. How do you enjoy it? Or it may be just the control itself is their enjoyment, is that they are superior and get everybody else to do. But still, they want to enjoy. They want to enjoy that platform. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the two are connected, because those are the cardinal sins. You come to this material world because we want to be the controller, God, and we want to be the enjoyer, God, right? The male principle. So that Purusha Bhav is what pollutes the consciousness. So polluted consciousness, or the chitta, means Purusha Bhav. So even though you're on the platform of Vasudev, still, that polluted consciousness can be there. The soul, when they are in the Mahat Tattva, they're pure. They're on the liberated platform. It's Brahman. Mahat Tattva is Brahman. They're on the Brahman platform. But from there, because they have desire to control and enjoy, then they fall down into the material world. Right? Right? That answers the soul falls from Brahman question. Does that make sense? So the key is the intelligence. It's the working principle. You use the intelligence with knowledge, then you apply it on the ego and on your needs and desires, on your values, then you progress. Okay, so it always goes back to the intelligence. Because intelligence can deal with something without much sentiment. Mind, it's just sentiment, just emotion. right? And the ego then is also, you know, a mood, right? Like that. But intelligence, you can go beyond that mood and see, even though I think I'm Napoleon Bonaparte and that, and want to be the lord of the three worlds, and somehow or another, my psychiatrist keeps telling me I'm not Napoleon Bonaparte. And, you know, and if I read this history of Napoleon, he does get better results. Not only that, he looks a lot better in the hat, you know. And, you know what I'm saying? So then one can start to doubt and start to change. Is that okay? Okay, this will be the last question and we'll stop. Yes. Ross is a sort of maintenance, because what is maintenance? Okay. trying to find an appropriate example. Boy likes girl. Girl's not around. Doesn't feel like doing anything. Girl has left him. Feels like killing himself. Right? Girl is mutually interested in him. He becomes very enthusiastic. Girl inspires him. He becomes very active in... Does that make sense? So, in other words, one's life is dependent upon rasa. What taste you get out of something is what inspires you to continue acting. No taste, no act. Right? Someone who's lost a taste for everything, how do you tell that? They don't do anything, right? So that's the point. So therefore, you're fully absorbed in rasa, so therefore your complete being is maintained because it's fully absorbed in Krishna. Right? The purpose of our existence is rasa. Otherwise, we've always existed in Krishna's Atmarama. But only for rasa are we manifest. You understand? So we're manifest for a purpose, to taste that rasa. Does that make sense? So like that. Okay, so we'll end here. Jai Ho, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandana.